Welcome to Everyone Deserves Sunshine. I'm Diana.
And I'm Anusha. We're the girls in the crease. Diana, we have listener questions.
Oh, yes. That's exciting. Okay, let's go.
I know. Very, very exciting. Okay, so this one's about why exactly are we calling ourselves girls in the crease?
I would like to know this as well.
Oh, it is, in fact, a hockey reference. Okay. As a hockey expert, maybe, of 2 weeks. So anyway, the crease in hockey refers to the goal crease, which is sort of a semicircle in front of the goalie. It's a very protective space. It's okay. A safe space.
It's a safe space. Just like this podcast.
Just like us. We're just a safe space.
There you go.
So there we are, listeners, for your curiosity.
Well, thanks for the hockey trivia.
I know.
Should we fucking go on with the show?
Love it. Okay, so this is episode 2, The Girls in the Crease Take on Masculinity. I feel like a little social lubrication is needed before we take on this pretty heavy topic.
A new show.
should we get the lube going?
We absolutely should, yes.
Okay, so what have you been doing with yourself this week?
Well, I've been doing a lot. In addition to living in the cottage, as I do, as you know from last time, you'll never believe this, but I went to a hockey game on Monday night. First ever.
Flyers.
So Flyers had their Pride night on Monday night.
I love that.
I know. I'm really excited. I said to one of my friends, or our friend, I guess, I really want to go to this hockey game. I feel like that would be the best way for me to like start, you know, to dip my toes into the world of hockey, which I am now very interested
in. You're very interested in hockey now.
Correct. So our friend, I keep saying mine, but he is our friend, took me to the hockey game. He's lovely. And he gave me the entire experience. We got hot dogs. We got beer. He even took me to the customer service desk to get me one of those certificates that says like first game ever.
So like a small child minus the beer.
Correct.
Pretty much.
So me and all the small children. So I and all the small children had the certificate. I will frame it as my
frame ever.
Are you
going to color it with crayons?
Yes. As probably all the other children.
Other children would.
Yes. So it was actually a lot of fun. Like I had the best time. At one point I turned around to him. Is this how like every hockey game is? And he's like, pretty much. It's a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, lots of great music. And guess what they played?
What?
All the things she said.
Stop.
Yep.
That tattoo version or the Harrison version?
The tattoo version. And it was awesome because then as they were playing the song, they showed the kiss cam and two beautiful women kissed. And it was the best part.
Did everyone go crazy?
Everyone went crazy. It was so awesome.
And did everyone seemingly recognize the reference?
Oh, well, so I wore a I'm coming to the cottage shirt.
So not a Flyers shirt.
I don't own Flyers gear because, again, first game.
Again.
Next to me or next to us. Two women sat who wore the Rosanoff shirts, the one that Ilya wears in episode 6 to go talk to the parents. Mm. And so I walked by at one of the intermissions. I think that's what they're called, intermissions.
Are
in
they?
Hockey. I want to say
it
yes.
Like a
listeners,
opera?
Please let us know. I think it's called intermission. I walked by them and like I opened my hoodie so they could see my shirt. Uh-huh. And then I looked at their shirt and I was like, I like your shirt. So we had a moment. We were all so excited. There was a lot of people there from Heated Rivalry.
I am not shocked at all about this.
It was pretty cool.
I mean, you really did go for this reason. I mean, it was inspiring. Heated Rivalry inspired you to go to your first hockey
Correct.
Game.
Exactly.
You know, my entire Insta feed has transitioned from Heated Rivalry to just real life hockey.
Do you like that?
I honestly am having trouble differentiating. So I saw this fight scene. Is it called a scene? I don't know. But anyway.
Intermission scene.
Yeah,
we're doing our thing.
Like, it's like kind of a very cinematic. But okay, so there's this fight and this guy, he just licks the stripe up the other player's neck. I was like, I mean, that was like a very sexy lick.
But they were fighting.
I was just stunned. And then, you know, the like groin stretch.
Yeah. I saw
that. That is not a real move, but it is a real move.
It is a real move.
I'm like, come on. I mean, what the heck?
What are you doing to us?
Yeah. What are you doing to us?
Seriously.
So you went to your first Flyers game. That's probably a good segue. Like it?
Yeah,
all right,
let's do it.
Talk.
Nice work.
Enough lube. We're prepped.
We're prepped. Let's go. We're ready to do this.
We're ready. Okay. So, you know, this is I had a really hard time not a hard time. I really wanted to do this topic justice because, I mean, who better to talk about masculinity than two women, I guess? You know, but right, exactly. But
I mean, men make decisions for us all the time.
All the time.
We may as well.
So we're impacted by masculinity on a daily basis, mm-hmm. right? So if you think about hockey, there's just a lot of these stereotypes or archetypes of, you know, traditional masculinity, right? Like what I mean by that is Ilya and Shane and Scott and all the other players, they're functioning in this hyper-masculine professional sports environment. You're talking about a lot of toughness, aggression, being very stoic, being physically dominant, right? I mean, hockey's known
for fighting.
And another hockey fact I've learned, there's actually a position called the enforcer, right? And it's exactly what it is. They intimidate the opposition. This is the game,
right? I feel like I would be an enforcer.
You would 100%.
That's the only position I would play.
You would play. You would just body check everyone at all times.
I would love that. That is my dream job.
That's you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love it. Sign me up.
But you know what? I think that sort of environment translates off the ice too. So you have this kind of bro culture. And I don't want to mix the masculinity layer theme with the kind of queer experience layer, but I think in heated rivalry, they're kind of related, right? Because you have all this locker room talk. You could say that's just like shit talking or chirping or whatever, but it feels like the sort of subtle homophobia is just totally just baked in, even in Canada. And you can talk a little bit more about sort of the Russian background. I'm gonna leave that to you because I think you'll do it justice. For example, like one of the players calls Ilya a cocksucker. Even Yuna, in that scene in the restaurant, you know what? There are many scenes in the restaurant with David and Yuna.
Yeah.
But the one after their first time they had sex, and she says something like, you know, and Shane's explaining YouTube, and you've realized this is happening years in the past, and like nobody knows quite what YouTube is yet. And the video is about Ilya scoring, what, 50 goals? What does he say?
They asked him about 40 goals. Oh. Yeah, and he's like, is lie. Liar told you that.
I love that line. It's amazing. And she says, Yuna says something like, fuck him up the ass. And Shane's just kind of like, like choking. But it's also kind of like, okay, you're just using these terms and these phrases freely, right?
Freely, yeah.
But the thing is, the people who participate in this, they're not bad people. They're just kind of a product of the environment. And I think the show does a really good job of setting the stage of why Shane and Ilya are the way they are and why it took them so long to come to terms with their relationship and their ability to be authentic, right? But even that being said, when they're in their own world, in their hotel room, in the condo, in the cottage, right, they learn to transcend these boundaries of what it means to be a man. You can be this like sporty, aggressive hockey player and still be this vulnerable person who loves another man. You can have confidence, but not this toxic bravado that we associate with toxic masculinity. And I just think that the show does such a good job showing how we have to slowly break these rigid rules of what it means to be a man.
Right. Yeah.
That was a lot. I had a lot of opinions.
You did.
I
wait until I get going.
Oh, I'm ready for you, girl.
So I asked our listeners on Threads, I asked them, what do you think about masculinity and the way it's portrayed in the show? And one of our listeners, also our friend, also said, and I quote, masculinity isn't physical strength. It's strength of character. Both Ilya and Shane are very competitive still. They are the captains of their teams.
They are one and two all the time.
Right? And so you think about it, like, how are they portraying what it means to display good and healthy masculinity? Mm-hmm. There's the softness, the caretaking, the tenderness. There's the emotional courage, the honesty. And then there's something like called emotional responsibility to one another, which we don't see often in traditional masculinity, whether we want to call it toxic or not, right? Like, it just, even when it's not toxic, we don't see a lot of this thing, a lot of this type of masculinity in our culture and society and all of the media that we consume. Ilya and Shane display that. Granted, in the beginning, it's not as much. Like, you don't see it as much, even though you do. Like, in the very beginning, like, Ilya very quickly clocks that Shane is sensitive and that he has, you know, he can have a panic attack. And so there's a lot of care with, like, Ilya does care about Shane in some ways, and he shows him affection with his words and his, you know, gestures and his physicality even, right? But if you remember that the episode 4, the tuna melt episode. The tuna melt episode.
Heartbreak.
The heartbreakiest, breakiest episode ever. I cry every single time I see that episode. But that episode is truly one of the pivotal moments where A, their relationship shifts, and B, they start showing a lot of this, like, emotional responsibility to one another, which
really,
we don't see
the tuna melt episode.
The tuna melt episode.
Even though, like, they broke each other's, like, heart a little
they
bit.
They did. They broke each other's heart a lot. But prior to that, when Shane is at his house, first of all, when Ilya says stay for the first time, he says stay. And Shane's like, I can't. I told, you know, Hayden, I'll be home. You know? And
he's Hayden's like, your mother?
Yeah, Hayden's your mother. Like, who cares what you told Hayden? So that's the first time they really are very close to each other. And they show emotional vulnerability, right? Like, for Ilya to have asked him to stay, that's Ilya finally, like, opening up a little bit, right? And then when Shane, when Ilya gets the phone call from his dad, and then, you know, he calls his brother, that really distressing phone call, Ilya does not want to share that part of him with Shane. It's, you know, Ilya is a very closed off person. He was raised in a very toxic environment, in a place with not much love and not much care and not much emotional intelligence and availability. He wasn't allowed to show his emotions, and I can say that that's very true for a lot of Russian men and how they grow up, not to mention he's a star player, right? So there's a lot of that. But so Ilya does try to hide that part of himself because I think he has shame in how he feels. But finally, when Shane looks at him and says, how's your dad? And Ilya's like, what, you speak Russian now, you know? And he tries to make a joke, as Ilya does, because that's self-protection, right? And deflection, and he protects himself with the way he talks to Shane a lot. And then in that moment, you could see Ilya kind of turn, and he realized that Shane is a safe person for him. And he's been testing that out the whole time because he's never really had many safe people in his life except for, like, Svetlana, right? And she's the only one he's had after his mom died. And so when Shane asks him, like, is your dad okay? And then instead of just kind of, like, answering him, Ilya takes him and, like, hugs him and, like, puts him on his chest. That is Shane's emotional responsibility to Ilya. And then Ilya responds to that by, like, showing this, like, emotional courage and tenderness towards Shane.
You know what's so interesting that you say? Because you say they show a lot of emotional responsibility. And I think they're very poor communicators. I mean, like, verbally, they're very poor communicators. What I feel is really interesting about what you said about sort of how they take care of each other, especially the gesture that you mentioned where he puts him on his chest after he talks about his dad, is that this sport, as we said, is just this, like, physically dominant, aggressive sport. And while they have a very difficult time communicating until, you know, they kind of get to the cottage and, you know, that line, which I love, for the next 2 weeks, can we just try to be honest with what we think and what we feel?
And that's, like, vulnerability, right?
But they had to be so explicit. Like, you're like, after 10 years, you're saying this to yourself, like, guys, like, let's get to it.
I mean, they're still boys.
They're still
boys. At the end of the day.
Right, they're still boys. But they use the, like, physicality in the rink, their physicality there, which is used for aggression, and then how they use their own physical bodies to provide comfort in their private sphere is just so, that juxtaposition is really stunning. It just shows that you can use different aspects of what it means to be masculine in, and it doesn't have to be this, like, strict little box, you know?
I agree. I think some of Ilya's initial conversations and how he talks to Shane and how he treats Shane can be seen as red flags, especially in Western culture. I think it's important for us to kind of look at Ilya from not a Western point of view and, like, give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. Because, like, Ilya, despite the fact that he is, like, you know, a star athlete propped up by Putin's Kremlin. He still shows so much positive masculinity in so many different ways. You know, he consistently asks for consent. He consistently checks in. He respects Shane's boundaries so often, and he de-escalates Shane. Like, he knows that Shane needs that from him, and he gives that to him. You know, like I said, yes, there could be some like red flag banter, but it's important also to know that Ilya, as I said earlier, has never been around safe people. So he's really kind of like testing the ground. Is this person safe for me? Is this person safe for me to be my true self, right? It's really self-protection, right? The little like, you know, picking at him a little here and there. Like I said, you know, earlier, he was never allowed to have really any feelings and emotions. And so he's learning how to be a good man, how to model positive masculinity, good masculinity, despite the fact not having anyone to model that for him before. Right? Like, yes, he has Svetlana who loves him, but he has no, you know, people who are modeling like positive behavior for a man.
Said something that was really interesting. I said they use their physicality to show tenderness. And you said, what did you say? Ilya, like de-escalates him.
Yeah.
So the
first time they meet, they have this encounter. They have a great time together, right? It's Shane's first time. So Ilya is definitely very gentle with him. Ilya can see that Shane changes, right? And he starts to get a little freaked out. And he says to Ilya, like, you're not going to tell anyone, right? And Ilya tries, right? And Ilya tries to have this, like, little banter, like, what do you think I'm going to tell? You know, as he does. And then he really quickly clocks that Shane cannot handle that at that moment. And so he backtracks and he's like, I'm not going to tell anyone,
right.
He calms him down.
Yeah.
And then in the second time, the second sexual encounter, when Ilya wants to have sex and Shane is, you know, worried and afraid and probably, you know, is not ready yet.
When Ilya asks what color his dildo is.
Yeah, in that part. Then Ilya says, like, we need to, you know, we're going to make, a, you know, we're going to do it next time. And Ilya again clocks that Shane is not well. And he puts his hand on his chest and he's like, Hollander, you're having a panic attack. You know, like,
Shane can't figure out where they're going to
meet. Like, he's in his mind.
He's like, what hotel?
Right. He's
where
in his mind. Meet? And so, like, this is Ilya being incredibly. And remember, they're also very young at that point. Right. And so Ilya is very perceptive in that moment. Ilya literally says, Shane, chill. It's just a plan to fuck.
It's a plan to fuck.
It's a plan to fuck. You're having a panic attack. Right, exactly. You're having a panic attack.
I really always enjoy when you talk about sort of the Russian experience, because I think it just, again, I think that's part of the reason you're always weeping, maybe, you know.
I cry all the time.
She cries all the time. But I think there is something, you know, there's this idea that, you know, you're connecting with the show in so many ways. And the language is probably one. But one of the things that you said was, you know, Russian men growing up in that culture who were sort of, I don't want to say victims, but just a product of that sort of inability to really express themselves. It's like baked in, right?
Right.
You know, but I just think for Ilya, the only person who seemed to ever cultivate that in him was his mom, right?
Yeah.
And she died.
Mm-hmm.
And he says it too in the sixth episode. The fifth episode. He says it like, my brother hates me. And he knows that his brother.
Oh, during the monologue.
Yes, during that monologue.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I know my brother hates me and I know why. My interpretation was that his brother and father hate him because he got the talent, right? Like, he got the talent, but he's the sensitive one. He's the soft one, right? And there, he's not like them, even though he, you know, is drinking and partying and spends money and sleeping with all sorts of people.
The Russian fuckboy.
Right.
He's playing the part.
He's playing the part, but underneath, they can see that he's not one of them.
Right.
And there's a lot to that sort of internalized
hatred.
His
brother calls them the hard F multiple times through the show.
And that was so hard to take. But, you're like, oh, that's such homophobic language. And it is.
It is.
But then you see, like,
it's so common in Russia.
You
though.
See also the Canadian side, what we talked about before. It's just baked in the culture, whether it's overt or covert. It's just, it's in there, right? And Ilya, like, not just the part of him that's bi or queer, that part, but the part of him that's soft, he's mm-hmm. never that he has had to internalize all this like hatred.
Right.
You know,
because being soft to men a lot of the times is like shameful. Like they're mm-hmm. ashamed of that part. They think it's weakness. Right. Because, again, they're like trapped in this cage, in this prison of what masculinity should look like. Yeah. And, you know, Ilya does like real strength. Right. Is letting someone you love seeing you scared and seeing you grieve. You're not like, you know, not like performing invulnerability, right? So, you know, for example, like when, you know, the Russian monologue, right? He's literally allowing Shane, even though it's in Russian. So there is some protection, right, for Ilya. Like Shane won't know exactly what I'm saying or anything what I'm saying, but I get to be vulnerable nonetheless, right? The All-Star game in episode 5 when mm-hmm. when Shane comes over and they go back to Ilya's hotel mm-hmm. and Shane has that serious conversation with him and he comes out to him, right? Exactly. And Ilya, again, he's closed off a little bit, right? Like he's just worried. And then Ilya, I think he finally sees that like Shane is not kidding. Like this is a serious conversation that they absolutely have to uh-huh. have. And he sits down next to him. And, you know, Shane starts telling him like, this is not, we're not just fucking. Like we are.
You feel it too, right?
You feel it too, right? And Ilya tries to be like, no. And then
I can't.
And then Shane is like, well, it felt like we were something, and Ilya's like, we can't be something. And Shane, like, well, like, what if we could? And he's like, it doesn't fucking matter. And you could see the hurt, right? It's not just he's trying to hurt Shane. He's not. He is himself hurting, and he's trying, again, he's trying not to show those emotions. And finally, when Shane just, like, really softly, like, I like you too much, right? And, you know, why can't we? And finally, Ilya's like, because Russia, mm-hmm. like, almost like, what don't you fucking yeah. understand
this
here?
Is very obvious.
Right. Like, it's very obvious. Shane, it's been 8 years. Like, have you not learned about Russia? Right. And he's like, my dad is police. My brother is police. Like,
Mother,
you know, I don't want to find out what will happen to me in Russia. It's the first time he tells Shane that his mother actually died. Right. And he cries. Ilya cries for the first time in front of Shane. And like, dude, for a man to do that in any media format, we haven't seen too much of that, right? Like he cries. Shane comes and hugs him and holds him.
That physical, like
that physical love.
And it's kind of a little reversed, right? Because he's usually Ilya like
right.
doing that.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
giving that support. It's a little reversed. That scene.
It's this, I got you. It's this, they're constantly like, I got you, yeah. you know, like.
I just remember watching that scene and thinking all of a sudden how young Ilya looked. Like yeah. when he turned his head away and mm-hmm. started to cry, I was like, oh my gosh, he's been this sort of semi-orphaned boy just trying his best to live in a foreign land.
Yeah.
And you know, such a good scene. I love that scene. So I just think that as an audience, and women, I really think we're like longing for that, right? That emotional connection. And our friends, you'd said like, oh, some people, what did you say? Some of our friends and other people watching with us think Ilya's an asshole, right?
I'm just saying a lot of people in my life have called me an asshole. And,
yeah,
you
and
know.
Okay, and you're one of the best people.
Thanks.
No, there's no snark there, no irony. I know sounded like it, but no. You are one of the best people, right?
And so when people call Ilya an asshole, I get a little, like, I get a little offended.
Right, you know? So, well, okay, what's so funny is that after I first watched this show, for the first time, early days, I was almost high, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And people said that to me, and I was so annoyed. I was hilariously, but I told my husband I felt disrespected, and my husband could not understand what
meant. You felt disrespected when people said Ilya was an
asshole? Yeah, yeah, okay, in the beginning. Yeah. And then our mutual friend, you know, she said something like that, and in our group text, I, like, eviscerated one of her favorite books, Wuthering Heights. I don't even know why.
Because they are our personal friends,
it was
Ilya
so funny.
And Shane.
And then I texted her separately, apologizing for all the things I said about Wuthering Heights. I admit it, it's absolutely insane. But now that we're doing this podcast, I feel more balanced, like more circumspect, you know, because mm-hmm. I actually love all these interpretations of the show. Mm-hmm. I feel like the best part is that these characters at the heart of them, you know, they grow and they learn and they change and they get better. And there's hope for that. I feel like that's what the joy of the show is that it shows the capacity for an environment to change, people to change, the way rigid norms of masculinity can be changed
and challenged.
And you just don't need to be perfect. You just need to reflect and be introspective. You can be imperfect, but you're not a bad person. It doesn't have to be this dichotomy of good, bad, toxic, or good masculinity. I just feel like it lets us sit in nuance in the best way.
Right. And we're missing nuance.
We have no nuance.
Yeah.
Nothing has nuance. Everything is like horrible or the best. Like there's nothing in between. Right.
And I agree with you. I think the fact that the show allows these characters the time to grow and become who they are. And it allows us to see men who can come off as perhaps like closed off or even cold. And it allows us to see them actually growing into good, kind, respectful, emotionally available, and emotionally intelligent mm-hmm, men. Mm-hmm. That, again, is something we don't see that often. And I love it. I love the way the show takes on this positive masculinity. And the one other thing I want to say, really want to talk about consent.
Mm.
I really want to talk about how in this show,
love the consent.
I love
You're
it.
All about
I really,
it.
Truly love it. Because in this show, consent is such like a masculinity flex here, right? Like, whereas in real life and in other forms of media or TV that we have seen, consent is like almost portrayed as like a mood killer, you know, mm-hmm. asking for consent during the time you're having sex or whatever else, right? Like, and here it's like almost like a turn on, right? Because like their first time when they first have sex, first of all, even before they have sex, you know, Ilya asks Shane, like, have you ever done this before? Whatever. And as soon as Shane says no and he feels uncomfortable, he tells them like, okay, next time, right? He respects that boundary. When they actually do meet to have sex for the first time, Ilya keeps checking in. Is this okay? Are you okay? Is this okay? Four times at least during their time that night together. And even when it's not like that, Ilya, even before, he says to him, don't worry, it will fit, as a joke.
Right.
But also as a, I know you're nervous, right? I know you're nervous, but like, this will work, I promise, right? And so I think that calms Shane, you know? So it's this like, you know, oh, and have you listened to the Empty Netters podcast?
No, I'm doing the other one, What Chaos.
Oh, there's I haven't listened to that one
There's
yet.
A lot of content to be consumed. It's like way too much.
The Empty Netters are amazing. Okay. They're like these three hockey guys. They have just a regular hockey podcast. And they got into the show and they review every single episode. And it is truly amazing. They are the, honestly, like in real life, the epitome of good masculinity. They are in love with the show. They analyze the characters. Right, exactly. They analyze the characters. They're invested in this love story. Like, so all three of them, straight men, all invested in this love story.
Yeah, the What Chaos guys are also like, they're so earnest in their analysis. It's not like a joke or any, you know, like they're invested in both the romance and the sort of hockey part and the relationship.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Earnest.
Yes, it's earnest. And you want that. We're craving that as women. Like, we want to see more of that. Like, I'm watching these random hockey guys talk about the show and I'm like, you're the kind of man that women love, right? Like, and you're so rare, or at least we don't, it's not displayed in many places, but they call Ilya the consent king. I love it because I 100% agree. Consent king every single time, even in the first shower scene, right? When they're showering
after the ad,
they're showering together and they're both standing there and Ilya starts masturbating, but you know, that could
after
be...
After Shane checks him out. I mean, he's after, like
right,
very
they're
clearly
both kind of checking
out.
Each other out. Ilya starts masturbating, but also with his eyes, he's like, kind of like, hey, like, this is cool,
is this okay?
Right? Like, this is cool, you know? And so that's a check-in, right?
And when Shane's like, not here, he stops.
He stops, right? Not here, he stops. He doesn't push. He doesn't do anything. And like, listen, not for nothing, but like guys in real life, like sometimes they don't stop, right? Yeah, and they push. True. And we as women know that to be true, you know? So consent, I think that's why I love consent in this show so much, because we don't see that. We don't see that in real life, hardly, right? We don't see that in like society. We don't see that in movies or TV. Mm-hmm. And seeing that on screen, the way it was done was like breathtaking to me, truly breathtaking.
I love that.
The show also makes like this masculinity like accessible to women,
yes.
You know,
and it's anybody, actually.
Right. But like, you know, as a woman, yes. Obviously, you know, I watched the show and like, you know, that part where the part in like the hotel room in the second, I always say the
which hotel room?
In the second episode, after they had their little like, you know, you haven't texted me for 6 months, and it's after Ilya wins MVP.
And you mean Chair?
I mean the Chair.
You
episode,
mean Chair?
Right?
The uncredited
actor. Just like
actor.
Like side note, Chair Farrell, right? Like Chair, it makes everyone Chair. Crazy, right? Yeah. That Chair scene. But anyway. In that moment, we see Ilya is kind of like taking the dom role in the relationship. And Shane is a little nervous. Obviously, he's never done this before. No shit. Right? And so
he says that. No,
he said it, right? Like, and Ilya's like, yeah, no shit. Right?
Yeah.
So there's definitely, if this was a scene between a man and a woman, I don't know about anybody else, but I've watched, you know, movies like there was a movie called Secretary a while back where like it was a boss and her, and it was very consensual, mm-hmm, but it was definitely mm-hmm. like a dom sub relationship, mm-hmm. right? And I, even though the woman wanted this in the movie, right, like the way she was treated and whatever, I still felt like uncomfortable for
uneasy.
Her, like uneasy, right, watching that scene. Whereas with the two men, right, like, yes, like Ilya is definitely the dominant one in this moment, but there's no inequality there, right? Like there's no shame for either one of them. They both consent to this very obviously. Shane clearly wants it as bad as Ilya mm-hmm. wants this. And it makes scenes like that accessible to women to
and
watch.
They're actually external equals, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Like
there's nothing unequal about them.
Completely
right.
Egalitarian.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's also like a really cool way to display both types of masculinity with mm-hmm. them right now.
Yeah. I love that analysis. And I also want to say, you know, yeah, they're growing, et cetera. They're showing their, you know, consent king vibe, all of it.
Yeah.
And I just feel like their story still, you know, season one ended, but it's also not a happy ending. It's an unfinished one, right? Like that's how real life works. In 6 episodes, you don't wrap up your life and decide after, you know, years of being in the closet and not, you know, not coming to terms with your own sexuality. You all like all of a sudden you decide you're like good to go and you're going to come out to everyone.
Right,
that's
exactly.
Just not how real life works. But there's this opportunity to change. Right. You know, so I just feel like it's so realistic. And like I said, I think it's that hope of change, the hope of a better way to be projecting honesty and masculinity. So I love that. I love this show.
Even outside of the show, both Connor Story and Hudson Williams like portray positive masculinity. Mm. And I love it. There was an interview with Connor where he basically said like, you know, Hudson is my best friend. And it's really interesting to watch people like sexualize us, even though we're just friends. We love being affectionate with one another. We've been through the craziest experience and this crazy roller coaster. And if I have my hand on his leg or we're sitting down somewhere and like at some press thing, he's my friend and I love him. And we just have that level of comfort. And like that is also
really
such
great.
Good masculinity, right? Because people just don't understand, like they don't. like, they don't want to see men be affectionate toward another, as friends, even, right? Like, I'm sorry, but even like in Russia, when men see each other after, like, you know, at a, some sort of social event, whatever, they hug, they kiss, like, they kiss each other on the cheek. Like, there's still like some affection, right? Whereas here in America, like, it's not as much. It's more like, you know, oh, then you must be gay. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's why everyone's like questioning their real sexuality.
Yeah, but we have no right to
this masculinity that's built here in the West is like, I mean, honestly, around the world, truly, it's like the public masculinity rules are a cage for men. It hurts everyone. These rules for masculinity, they hurt everyone. It literally hurts our society. And I really would love it if some show, if this show would open doors for a lot more content with this positive display of masculinity, because that is what we want. We don't want the culturally trained version of masculinity that's like emotionally unavailable and shut down, that's defensive, that's hostile. Like, we do not want this. Please listen to what women want from
men. Please listen to us. Our man, whose name I'm maybe I'm butchering.
Scott Hunter.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to call him Scott Hunter. You know, the actor who plays him, he said something really similar to, he said that, you know, in the last few years, we've talked a lot about toxic masculinity, but we forget that men are the first victims of it. He goes on to not just say that men are the only victims of it, but he's expressing that concept that you're expressing. Like, if you start off that way and that's the environment you're raising, you're kind of perpetuating this cycle. Mm-hmm. So I think people, not just women, people are ready for this kind of show. And that's, I think, what a lot of the positive reaction is.
Right. Exactly.
And I also want to say, here's one thing. Okay. So we've said all this gloriously positive stuff and, you know, analysis, but I will say one thing. Yes, it subverts these tropes of masculinity, et cetera. But Shane and Ilya, they're typically masculine, right?
Absolutely. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you'd say they're really attractive in that way. They're strong. They're built. Their abs are...
They're athletes. They're
going on,
you know,
for days. And you could say that. You could say, okay, they're athletes. They're intended to be like that. I totally get it. But that was a choice, right? And we are also responding to that choice, because no matter how much I want to like clap for this flip of masculinity, I'm still like marinating in the culture. And I think, okay, so I know you don't want any book spoilers and I'm not giving it to you. I 100% feel like the book does such a good job sort of being like supporting the way the show, and you get so much more, you get detail about the entire sort of universe. But in the book, there's this scene in The Long Game. So season two, I think, Ilya and Shane season two, there's a scene where this other player, they refer to him in the Tuna Melt episode.
Ryan.
Oh, wait,
you remember that guy? The guy when they were like talking about him being traded all the time. And Ilya was like, he's not like who you think he is or something like that. Yeah,
I love that. I love that like throw. And so Ryan and in The Long Game has this boyfriend Fabian, and Shane meets them and Ilya meet them for their first time, but they're not out as a couple. Shane and Ilya, and
at that point,
and Fabian's maybe more femme presenting, and then Shane says thinks something like, even as a gay man who's in love with another man, and I wrote this down, he couldn't help the knee-jerk reaction of uneasiness. I thought that was so meta to me. I felt like Rachel Reed was holding this mirror up and saying, hey, you're reading this book, but like, think about how you can grow from where you are. Mm-hmm. Like, think about your inherent biases, you know? Right?
Right. Because many of us are like very open and progressive and all these things. But then like, there are times where certain people or certain things or certain events will like challenge us. And we have to reconcile that. Like, we have to figure out why and hopefully come to a time. So hopefully there's growth, and there's room for growth,
And then growth can be really joyful. Yeah. And that's my favorite part of the whole show. It's like all of this can be a really joyful experience.
Right.
Speaking of joy, this is my favorite part of the show already, and it's only episode two. And I think about all week what we're going to say here for our moment of sunshine. So You tell me yours first because I went first last week.
Okay, awesome. All right. So my moment of sunshine this week is watching Heated Rivalry with my husband. It took me a little while to convince him because he's not like a TV person. He's not like a romance person. He likes like sci-fi type stuff more. But anyway, we're finally watching it together. We're having a great time. I'm having the best time of my life because I'm so excited to see him react to the show.
Are you like watching him watch it?
Actually, no, but I'm not. But we're together, you know, obviously after the kids go to bed, and we're really enjoying it. And last night we watched episode five. And I will fight anyone if they challenge me on this, because episode five is the greatest episode on television ever made.
Cinematic masterpiece.
Didn't
get like a perfect score.
Yeah, it beat like it took Breaking Bad off its like 13-year run of being number one, right? Episode five, we watched it last night. I was so nervous for his reaction because, like, you know, I've been building this up in my head forever. And I think it's perfect. I think it's a perfect episode. And he loved it. He loved it so much. Mm-hmm. We talked about it for like an hour after. And he agrees that it is, if not the best, one of the best episodes ever made for TV.
We didn't watch much TV.
From everything we have seen as a couple and as individuals, this was one of the best things we've ever seen. To me, the best, period. I will fight you if you disagree with me.
I love it.
And I'm the enforcer.
You are the enforcer. You will be intimidated.
All right, Anusha, how about yours? Thank you. I love it too.
So my moment of sunshine is related to episode four. I tried a tuna melt for the first time. I felt like I had to do it for authenticity because I was like, I can't talk about tuna melts.
Oh my God.
And I've never had one. Right. So my husband got me one from Wawa. So for our Canadian listeners, and we have Canadian listeners or one Canadian listener who downloads it multiple times. I don't know. Anyway, for our Canadian listeners, Wawa is like Tim Hortons, just for reference.
Good, good. So what else? That's it? That's your moment of sunshine?
Are you going to ask me like what it evoked in me?
That was about to say. I thought you were just going to keep going.
I was waiting for you.
I'm sorry. Yes. So you had the tuna melt from Wawa. And what did that do for you?
The concept of warm canned tuna is just like a little off-putting, but I did eat it. Mm-hmm. It was weird at first, but I got into it the more I ate. So I had to explain to my husband why I asked for this tuna melt. And they explained all about episode four, the tuna melt of heartbreak. And then he pointed out something very important, that the sandwich was actually between sex episodes, so like a sex melt. And I felt like nothing can really compare to that kind of tuna melt. But anyway, that's my moment of sunshine. That's all
I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a tuna melt pro.
You make them?
No. Okay. I don't make them, but my friends and I, when we would party all night in the clubs, we would go to a diner and always order tuna melts.
That was not my adolescence. Maybe this is where I went wrong, because I did not
I had a bunch of tuna. I love a tuna melt. I haven't had it in years, but I think tomorrow I might have one.
You're going to have to go to Wawa and get a tuna melt.
It matters what bread it is, though. So it has to be like really good, solid bread.
What's good, solid bread?
Like rye, maybe?
Oh, mine was just on like a roll.
Like an American bread? That's
nasty. No, like a roll.
No. You need like solid, hearty. Like hearty bread for a good tuna melt, because it has to hold it all together. It can't fall apart.
It can get soggy.
Correct. I love your moment of sunshine. I love that you finally had a tuna melt.
Finally. So Heated Rivalry is changing lives by making us go see hockey games and eat tuna melts.
Correct.
Next week on Everyone Deserves Sunshine, we're talking about the immigrant experience.
Yes. Join us when we discuss Ilya, his family. We'll talk about language. We'll talk about language barriers. Just about what it feels like to be an immigrant, you know, in this world.
Wow, I wonder if that's like a relevant topic.
Well, as an immigrant, I have a lot to say about this.
And Yuna too. Yeah. I think that shapes a lot of how she interacts.
That's also true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So this topic is so close to my heart for so, so many reasons. Like you stated, I can't wait to get into it. Thank you to all the listeners of this little podcast for sending time with us, the girls in the crease.
Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you want to say hi to the girls in the crease, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Everyone Deserves Sunshine.
New episodes drop on Mondays.
See you then.